And welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Rob Matheson. The United Arab Emirates has promised to retaliate against the most significant attack by Yemen's Houthi rebels in years. At least three people are said to have been killed when drones struck oil facilities near Abu Dhabi airport. Why did the Houthis attack? And what message are they sending as Yemen's civil war enters its seventh year? Okay, let's bring in our guests in Yemen's capital, Sana'a, is journalist Hossein Al-Bukhayti. In London, Elizabeth Kendall is a senior research fellow at Pembroke College at the University of Oxford. And in Bristol, we have Sabah Al-Khuzai. He's an academic and a political analyst. Thank you very much indeed, all of you, for joining us. Elizabeth, let me ask you first. There's a lot we still don't know about these attacks. One happened at a busy international airport. Both were close to residential areas. But in the 24 hours immediately after the attacks, there have been very little videos on social media. There's been very little comment about it. What do you make of all of this?
I think that what's happening is that everyone's assessing the extent and the impact of the attack before they rush to conclusions. And this is very smart, especially on the part of the UAE. They don't want a knee-jerk reaction. But I think it's safe to say already that this is a very significant development in the war. Although it's not completely unprecedented, you know, there have been Houthi claimed attacks on the UAE before. It's much more usual to see this type of coordinated drone and ballistic missile attack against Saudi Arabia, the immediate neighbor of the Houthis to the north. And in fact, there have been about 1,000 such attacks on Saudi Arabia since the war began. But no attack like this involving the loss of life in the United Arab Emirates. So this is a major breach of UAE security. Lives have been lost. It's deep into UAE territory. It's a real escalation, and it opens up yet another regional dimension to the conflict.
Hossein Al-Bukhayti, the Emirates, as we said, had claimed to at least have scaled down its presence in Yemen, at least in terms of its own troops. The Houthis, as Elizabeth just mentioned, have been focusing on Saudi Arabia. Why attack the Emirates now? What's prompted this?
Because, as you mentioned, that United Arab Emirates has de-escalated its involvement. Of course, they have withdrawn some of their personnel and troops from Yemen, but they continue to support the separatists and to support groups that are even not loyal to the so-called Hadi government. They just want to divide Yemen. It's like they say, divide and conquer. And what about the latest attack? Because United Arab Emirates, after they withdrawn from Hodeidah coast, they have sent those troops called the Giant Brigade to Shabwa, and they start the fighting. And then United Arab Emirates has fully resumed its airstrike against many areas, not only in Shabwa, as well in Marib and in Damar and in other area. That's why Yemeni army and some officials and army commander here, they have warned United Arab Emirates about a week ago that if they are not going to stop their attack, that Yemen will attack United Arab Emirates. And this is exactly what happened. And I believe that if United Arab Emirates will continue as they did in the last 24 hours in response to the attack on United Arab on Abu Dhabi, they have targeted a residential area in Sana'a, killing 12 civilians, injuring 11, and there are several people still missing. 10 people is from Al Junaid family. They killed the father, the mother, their nephews and nieces, and their daughters and their sons. And that's why I think that in the coming days we might see a major attack against United Arab Emirates, because the latest attack on Sana'a was conducted by United Arab Emirates fighter jet.
Sabah Khuzai, do you think that the Houthis are capable of actually producing a sustained campaign against the United Arab Emirates? Or are we going to see a series of intermittent attacks similar to what we've seen so far?
Well, could be, in fact, you know, but not really. I don't think they are, you know, presenting a very real threat to the security and sovereignty of United Arab Emirates. I think this attack is like, you know, flexing their muscles. I mean, you know, the Iranian muscles, if I may say, because we all know that Houthi, backed by Iran, is a proxy war on behalf of Iran happening in Yemen. However, it's a very dangerous escalation. And I think, you know, the wise people in Houthi, if I may say, should take into consideration that this is a violation of the sovereignty and integrity of United Arab Emirates. And of course, it's a threat to the security of the region. And this escalation will not lead to anywhere whatsoever. And we all know very well that the Houthi has conflicted so many casualties and defeats in the Maghreb front line. And the official government forces, I mean the Yemenese army and the resistance, and of course, you know, joined by the giant brigade, the Alwiyat al-Amalika, has marched towards Shabwa, and now they are marching to Bihan and Hareb. And this major, you know, this major battlefield will really hit hard the Houthis' presence in that region. This is why they are trying to, what they call it, to punish the United Arab Emirates of such involvements, because United Arab Emirates are really, you know, training and army and, you know, supplying munitions and arming the giant brigades and other official governments forces in the region. So Houthi thinks that by doing this, by attacking, you know, civilian targets or oil refineries in Abu Dhabi, the capital of United Arab Emirates, might, you know, put hold on such effect of the United Arab Emirates in the region, I mean, you know, in the conflict in Yemen.
Elizabeth, I want to ask you about the point that Saba just brought up there. Those links that are believed to be existing between Iran and the Houthis, we're at a stage, if I understand it correctly, where Saudi Arabia and Iran are in the midst of ongoing exploratory talks, as they've been described, which are being hosted in Iraq and they're being hosted by Baghdad. But I understand that we're also some Iranian officials had moved to Jeddah just in the last 24 hours or so in order to be part of the Organization for Islamic Cooperation, which condemned these attacks. Now, my question is this. Is this the right time for the Houthis to be carrying out attacks like this when there appears to be some effort on the parts of Saudi Arabia and Iran to reach some sort of agreement between them?
Yes, that's the $60 million question. I think it's important to understand at the moment that we're not clear on precisely how closely the Houthis and Iran collaborated on these particular attacks. And that's important because it helps inform the message that they're trying to send us. And I think it's also important to point out that the Houthis are supported by Iran, but they're not a direct proxy. The Houthis can still make independent decisions. So what kind of message is being sent at this time? I think we can read it in various ways. And these pivot really around two parallel strands of Iran talks. As you say, there's a regional independent dialogue happening between Iran and Saudi Arabia and also Iran and the United Arab Emirates. And the Houthi message perhaps in that case is, look, we're still here. We're a persistent threat. And it doesn't matter if you make sideline agreements with Iran. We're an independent entity and we're still going to be bellicose. The other strand, the second strand, is of course the international JCPOA, the nuclear deal talks. And these are reaching quite a fraught position at the moment. There's an urgency to get them over the line. So this could be Iran sending a message to the international community saying, look what we can do. We can destabilize the region. You need to give us more. You need to yield more to our demands.
Saba, you were shaking your head at the first part of Elizabeth's answer. Just tell me what you think about Elizabeth's response.
Well, I'm really confused, you know, by this, what she's saying. She's saying that, you know, it's not very clear that the Houthi is doing a proxy war on behalf of Iran. And then in other words, she said that the next strand maybe is a message from Iran to the communities and to the American that, you know, we have to give up, you know, to give us, you know, some concessions in the nuclear deal. So I think, you know, we need to make up our minds and we need to make sure that after 7 years, how can we suspect our knowledge, our wisdom, that Houthi is independent of the effect of the of Iranian. We know very well that the Iran is a playing, you know, poker game with the region and with the world. And they are holding, you know, four cards in Lebanon and in Iraq and in Syria and in Yemen. However, there are some rumors, and I'm not sure about that, those attacks is not conflicted or, you know, done by the Houthis. Mm. There are some rumors, there are some security reports, it might have come from the from Iran, the same as Aramco 2 years ago, or came from Iraq. Mm. And Iraq have, you know, 16 militias under the leadership of Ismail Kaani, Al-Quds Brigade, you know, leader, and they are, you know, receiving their, you know, orders from Tehran. Mm. So,
Saba, let me interrupt.
Surprise, Rob.
Yeah, forgive me for interrupting you, but I take your point. I think Elizabeth, we should stress that Elizabeth was saying it's not clear what the link is. That's not to say that there isn't a link or there is. It just simply the actual links, the definition, if you like, of that link isn't clear. But I want to come to Hossein Obokhaiti because you're, of course, in Sana'a. You are working alongside or working certainly in a situation where the Houthis are operational. From your experience, is there any indication that there is a specific link between Iran and the Houthis, and Iran could be controlling what is happening on the grounds with the Houthis? Now, I don't want to get too deeply into this because we are talking, of course, about the Emirates, but I just think that this is an important point to try and make clear. What's your analysis, briefly, sir, if you would, of what that situation is?
I mean, Iran, of course, it supports Yemen politically and as well throughout the media. And as well, Mohammed Abdesalam, the spokesperson of Ansarullah, have said months ago that Yemen is getting some help from Iran, kind of information about building the military information about the weapons and building and making the weapons. But the claim that there are weapons coming or ballistic missile that's 12 meter long and a few ton in weight that they are smuggling to Yemen. I mean, the Yemen is under blockade and Saudi are targeting these small boat and small ships, small fishing boats. So how can Iran smuggle those types of weapons? And it's really, really actually funny or silly that we still hear, especially in the United Arab Emirates, they blame Iran, and they as well, they claim that the war and their involvement in Yemen is because to liberate Yemen from Iran. And on the other hand, we see that United Arab Emirates has a great relationship with Iran. They have struck some economic deals with Iran. They have some security deals, and they have embassy between them. And I mean, why are you coming to fight the Iranian in Yemen? And on the other hand, United Arab Emirates claim that Iran is occupying three islands. I mean, is it better for United Arab Emirates to liberate their country, as they claim, then coming to liberate Yemen from what they say the Iranian involvement. But what actually the coalition is doing, they trying to make any attack that is not will not affect. But if you see at the beginning of the war, it was the Saudi and United Arab Emirates who advancing on the ground, who launching attack and strike against Yemen. But now, after 7 years, it's the Saudi and United Arab Emirates now who are start to cry out loud to the international community. And now they are talking about the security of the region. This means that Yemeni forces here in Sana'a and Yemeni army are a threat now, not only to Saudi forces and United Arab Emirates forces in Yemen, but as well to United Arab Emirates itself and Saudi. Mm. And one final thing about talking that those latest attacks against civilians area in United Arab Emirates, like Abu Dhabi Airport and the oil facility. Yes, those are civilians. But we came here in Yemen, as they say, to a conclusion, an eye for an eye. United Arab Emirates has destroyed with the Saudi all Yemeni airport, all Yemen port. They have bombed schools, mosques, and everything. Just imagine about more than 400,000 of Yemeni civilians have died either by the blockade or by the Saudi.
Hussein, I take your point. I want to move on if you do.
And only a handful, just one last point. Handful of civilians have been killed, according to Saudi and United Arab Emirates, on all the attack that coming from Yemen. They show you that Yemen forces are careful to avoid civilians as much as they can.
Okay, I actually want to kind of expand on that point and bring us back to the incident that we've seen just recently. Elizabeth, Given the fact that the Emirates has removed a lot of its own troops from the ground in Yemen, do you think that that is going to encourage it to mount even greater attacks in Yemen from now, because it has fewer of its own citizens to put at risk?
Yes, that's possible. As my colleagues have pointed out, one of the triggers of this attack now may be that the UAE-backed forces have played a crucial role in pushing back Houthi advances in Shabwa, in Ma'rib. And so the message from the Houthis in that case might be pull back, UAE, pull your backed forces away, or there could be worse to come. Now, this might well backfire. In fact, I think it's likely to backfire. What it's likely to do is to steal the resolve of the United Arab Emirates against the Houthis, and to also perhaps help mend some of the rifts that had started to appear inside the Saudi-led coalition and pull them back together again to really try to counter the Houthi threat. Or it could come back to bite them inside their own countries.
Mm. Sabah, let me ask you about the global perception of this, the PR element of it. There was a period of time, certainly in the latter years of the Yemen war, when it was widely regarded as a PR disaster for the coalition, for Saudi Arabia, and for those involved in it. Do you think that the Emiratis would be willing to risk that PR disaster again by increasing the number of attacks in Yemen?
They are not rescuing in a PR. They are, in fact, retaliating to what sort of aggressive attack, terrorist attack, to their facilities and to their civilians. However, I just want to remind Europe that there are, you know, United Nations Resolution 2216, which clearly state that this is the Houthi has made a coup and they have to withdraw their forces from Yemen and submit everything, their weapons and their armies, to the legitimate governments of President Abdurrabbah Hadi Mansour. Don't forget that. This is international recognition. This is one. The other thing, you know, after this attack from yesterday up to now, 24/7, international condemnation from all over the world, the United Nations, the USA, Britain, European Union, France in particular, most of the Arabs and most of the in Asia, India, Malaysia, Pakistan. And this means that this is how aggressive and how evil this attack to the United Arab Emirates. On the contrary, if I may say, that I think the forces in this, if you excuse me, I quote, in this front, Ma'rib, Shabwa, Bihan, Ain, Harib, Mala'a, Ajoba. This is a vital front line, battlefield. They will march forward. This is why the Houthis are crying. And in the end of the day, let me make it very clear. This is the war. It's not between United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia or the Arabs alliance against Houthi. No, it's between the Arabs and Iran. I repeat, between the Arabs and Iran. Our battlefield in four countries, in Iraq, and in Yemen, and in Lebanon, and in Syria. This is very clear. And please tell me, it's really funny to listen to people saying that they have missiles and they have drones, and they think that, you know, Iran is helping them only, you know, support, political support and media support. No, they are supporting them with all kind of weapons. There is no manufacturing facilities in Yemen or in Saudi, in the mountains of Saudi.
Hussein, let me ask you just to pick up on the point that Sabah is making there. If there is international condemnation and criticism of this action by the Houthis, will that be enough for the Houthis to rein in, to show what some would regard as a mature response, a proper response? They've made their point. They've hit the United Arab Emirates, and now they do know more if there is that international pressure in order to acknowledge that response from the International Committee. Would the Houthis, do you think, be prepared to do that?
I mean, all this condemnation from many countries, most of those countries are either in the, as you said, some Arab nation are in the coalition, or some countries who have a good ties with the Zionist state of Israel, and as well from countries like UK, France and United States who are fully supporting this war and making billions of dollars in selling the wars. Just I want to make one thing clear. Who is actually now crying out loud is not Ansarullah the Houthi, is the United Arab Emirates, who is celebrating and Saudi with this type of condemnation. Ansarullah officials have said here that any international calls or any UN Security Council decision or resolution, they said they will put them under their feet. So they don't care about that because they know that the UN Security Council is in the hand of the United States, and United States is in ally with the United Arab Emirates and Saudi, so they will do whatever it takes to help those two countries. And we remember at the beginning of the war when the United Nations has removed Saudi from and United Arab Emirates from a list for killing children. At that time, the security general said that they blackmail us, they pressure us, they will cut funds. That's why we have removed their name from that list. And on the second year, they have thanked the coalition for avoiding killing Yemeni children. This show you that here in Sana'a, they don't believe the international community, and they will do what it takes to attack Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates. And one final
Hussein,
thing,
I'm going to interrupt you there because we're running out of time, Yemeni and I apologize, but I want to give the last question to Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, forgive me because we only have a few seconds left. In a couple of sentences, given the level of international pressure that we have here, we've seen talks between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia and various other sides which have reached a stalemate. We've seen this military action now. And please do forgive me because we don't have a lot of time. How do you see this playing out over the next few weeks?
Well, I think there are three main implications of this. First of all, it changes the calculus of both the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia towards the war. It shows them what could happen in their own countries. Second, it makes an agreement with Iran even more urgent, because even if the Houthis are acting independently, well, they need their weapons replenished from somewhere. Someone's supplying them. Someone has trained them. And it's very likely that that is Iran. And then third, Yemen shoots up the international agenda. It may have fallen off with other problems like Afghanistan or Ethiopia, but now, with the region potentially ablaze, with the overspill that everyone was concerned about from the Yemen war actually up there as a possibility, I think everyone's eyes will turn back to Yemen.
Elizabeth, thank you very much indeed. I want to say thanks to all our guests, Hussein Al-Bukhayti, Elizabeth Kendall, and Sabah Al-Khuzay. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Ng, Osama Aloni, Abdurrahman Warsami, and Paul Taylor. Studio sound was by Deepak Pushkaran. The program was edited by Anna Savage, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFries. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thanks for listening. We're going to be back again on Wednesday.